TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
All right, another edition of Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill here with you, and Dane Moore is here with me in studio. Danny's not here. Danny is soaking up the warm sun in Mexico right now while we're sitting here in the winter, frigid winter temperatures in Minnesota.
In this windowless room in Minnesota. I don't even know if the sun exists.
So shout out to Danny, who's enjoying a little time off down in Mexico right now. But Danny will be back with us next week. Lots to get into with the Wolves today, Dane. And they're kind of in a weird sort of up and down stretch right now. I mean, Boston, they took on the Boston Celtics last night. They were pretty shorthanded with no Derrick Rose. Haven't had Jeff Teague in a little bit here. And they were also missing Robert Covington, which I think was probably the most glaring piece that was missing, just because you just saw how much they struggled, especially in the first half on the defensive end. And I'd say that to say this: what has been the issue defensively? Because even when Covington has been playing, they've had some issues on defense now. I mean, that stretch that they had where, you know, that immediate post-trade stretch that they had, they were playing really good defense, and that's really kind of tailed off. We've talked about the amount of three-point shots that they've been giving up, and you couple that with not making a lot of three-pointers, it's led to some losses. So from what you've seen, what has been the problem defensively, you think, with this team?
Well, let's just start by re-acknowledging briefly what those three-point against numbers are for December. So this includes everything but the Boston game.
Mm-hmm.
They were 30th in opponent 3-point makes per game, 13.5.
Oof.
29th in opponent 3-point attempts against, 33.9, and opponent field goal percentage. They were also last in, and that was opponents ranking 39.9% of those. And then also the differential's huge. It's 4.2. Makes per game, and that's also 30th. So you're like a 30th, 29th, 30th, 30th in basically the big three-point category. So, but I think what you're asking is, like, yeah, we know that. Like, the opponents are making a lot of field goals. The Wolves aren't making a lot of three-point field goals. And we kind of know that just stylistically hasn't been a big part of the Tom Thibodeau offense ever since he's been here.
Mm-hmm.
But the defense part is the more interesting element of, you know, why is that happening? And it's interesting. I think it's a product of overhelping by some other pieces, actually, like the better defenders of the group. I think Robert Covington and Taj Gibson are like, can overhelp to a degree where it just makes it be like one pass, two pass, corner three.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not obviously because Covington or Gibson are, are poor defenders themselves. I think they're trying to take bigger strides than they need to cover up for some of the other players, shortcomings around them. That was actually a thing a lot with Taj last year as well.
Yeah.
It made a little bit more sense, but like, I mean, if you would watch Taj when he'd be on the weak side, I mean, he would really cut all the way into like to the middle of the lane. And I think a classic Taj Gibson like image in my head over and over is him, you know, busting his butt to get out to the corner three and try and like flail at it to contest it, you know,
mm-hmm.
but coming up short. And I think so. It's a product of a little bit of overhelp, but also I think there's just some bad luck and then just a lack of effort too. A lot of that's transition defense, and a lot of transition defense is effort too. So it's a combination of things. Is that a fair answer to say?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. And I wonder if the overhelp that we're seeing is sort of a, especially like in the case of Taj, is he just like not fully trusting like Cat as a defender yet? And we've seen Cat improve his individual defense over the course of this season.
Totally. I mean, he's been great, right? Since Cove has been here.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering if it's just sort of the overhelp has just become sort of a habit now because Cat struggled so much defensively last year, that Taj is just sort of naturally now, he is just naturally overhelping with that thought in the back of his mind, well, I gotta help Cat out. I gotta help clean things up for Cat because it's almost like maybe he doesn't need to do that as much because Cat has improved on that end of the floor.
I think that's fair. I just think the habit goes back even before he got to Minnesota. I mean, you go back to those old Bulls days, and I think that made more sense to overhelp because it was, you know, 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
And the teams didn't punish that overhelp in the same way they do now with, you know, the volume of three-pointers and particularly corner three-pointers that, you know, poke into that exactly. So Taj is he's evolved his offensive game to some degree. You know, he's taken a couple corner threes himself, but like at the end of the day, like him and Teague and, you know, a lot of these guys, they grew up in a different NBA. And I know that it's only like 32, 33 years old, but like he did. It's the way that Chicago Bulls team defended, they're number one in defensive rating, right? Like back in 2010-11. Like, if you put that same exact group out there today and you had them defend in the exact same way that they did, you know, back then, that team isn't, I don't think that's even a top 10 defense. I just don't think that works in the, you know, the same way it did. Could they evolve and be good? Like, they obviously had good defenders. Like, Joakim Noah was great. You know, Jimmy Butler, Taj, whatever. But it's a different NBA that asks you to do very different things offensively and defensively.
Which then leads me to the question of looking at the head coach, that probably means he needs to change his defensive scheme, right? Or tweak it a little bit.
I always have this, you know, the first half of yesterday's game was pretty brutal. And, you know, you start seeing the crazy, you know, takes come out on Twitter, and it's like Armageddon. You know, anytime the Wolves fall back by like 20, it's you can't scroll one or two spots without seeing a fire tips thing.
This is why I don't tweet very much during games.
Oh yeah, that's smart. I'm during the commercials, if I'm, you know, not at a, or, you know, commercials during, at when I'm at a game too, I'll look, you know, kind of see what's going on. And yeah, they're getting blown out, and it's obviously attacks at Tibbs. And, you know, to some extent, obviously, the Thibodeau era hasn't gone well. Mm-hmm. But defense, when what you're attacking specifically is that his defensive scheme has not changed, that's patently wrong. It has. This season, it is, particularly since they've added Robert Covington, but even before that, the way they defend things, namely the pick and roll, has changed tenfold. I don't think people actually know what they're watching on defense. I think people have been so classically trained to watch offense, and they just follow the ball, and they do the same thing when they're watching the defense be played. But what the ways in which the Wolves are defending stylistically, particularly against the pick and roll, is night and day different than what they did a season ago with Tom Thibodeau. One person, all you got to look at to notice one difference is Cat and where he goes when a pick and roll happens. Last year, what would happen is every time, what I've used is like he had a tow rope connected to his tailbone. They set a pick and roll, and Tibbs is sitting there cranking the rope, pulling him back towards the rim. That's what would happen every single time. Mm-hmm. Now we see a wild diversity of different ways in which he's allowed to without getting into too much terminology, like he can do a bunch of them. He can come up and play on it. He can straight switch it. They can hard double it. I mean, there is an array of different ways that this team is defending the pick and roll. And that is because Robert Covington is on this team now. It's because Tom Thibodeau has allowed the defensive system to evolve. Is he a great coach? No, I'm not saying that, but still, even in this chaotic time, these guys have been, how many games have they had these guys for now? 24?
24, yeah. They're 13-12 since the trade, and they didn't have those guys for the first game.
And they
after
yep.
the trade.
And they are 12th in defensive rating in that time frame. So I mean, if you wanna have like the fire Tibbs takes, like for reasons that are, you know, institutional and lack of belief in the coach and GM thing together. Like, I get that. If you think his offense is grading to some extent, I get that. But to say he's locked in his ways defensively and this is what he does and is always on, you're just missing it. It's not what's happening. They defend differently, and to some extent it's working. They're just not a very good, they don't have a ton of talent. They don't have a ton of defensive talent, and that's why they're just okay. But I honestly think when we see these breakdowns now, it's a lack of execution much more than it is a poor scheme. And that wasn't the case last year. The scheme last year, I think, was problematic.
Should we be concerned with what's going on with Robert Covington right now? Because it just seems like since that Portland game that he missed, he just hasn't, when he's played, he just hasn't, and he's had some good games. I'm not saying he's like falling off the cliff or anything like that, but it just seems a little bit off. Like, he just doesn't seem quite like himself, like he seemed before he missed that Portland game a couple of weeks ago.
I think it's obviously there's an injury involved in here to some extent. We can't know that. He'll tell you, yeah, it's moving in the right direction. Tibbs will tell you it's moving in the right direction. We don't know what the extent of this injury is. It sounds like it's going to be something that's going to linger to some degree. What I think we do, or maybe missing with Robert Covington, is I think he just really got mentally drained. He like came in after the trade, played with a bunch of energy, made it. Things were working and he was, you know, was going really well, and just kind of the chaos of your life changing. I mean, this is what he said. He said to us in the locker room, he's like, you know, it just was, my life was out of control. You know, I didn't have I don't have clothes like that were like here yet. I'm going and buying clothes. I'm living in a hotel. I don't have a car. I miss my family. I have all these things. And I think, like, isn't that kind of what, like, doesn't that make sense as to what you're describing? He just doesn't seem exactly like who we believe he can be. And it does appear to be something, yes, that's physical. I think you can point to some differences in the way he's played physically.
Because it's not like he's playing poorly. It just doesn't seem like the first, you look at that, those first 8, 9, 10 games, and we're just like, oh my God, look at what this guy is, look at how he has changed the defensive everything for this team, and now it's just kind of like, all right, yeah, he's playing well, but we're just not seeing that same impact. And maybe he is still having the same impact, but it's just not as in your face as it was like those first couple of weeks post Butler trade.
I mean, and it's so hard to, you know, to try and analyze somebody's mind that we're not in,
right?
But at the end of the day, it's got to change. Like, I don't know. I don't feel bad saying this because, you know, I lauded him in all those first 15 games or whatever. He was awesome and, you know, kept his team relevant. But, I mean, he blew the Atlanta game. Like, he basically missed two dunks, to end the game there. Yeah, hit a big three, sure. But, like, there's been a big handful of really poor Robert Covington performances. And they do appear to be somewhat, you know, mentally motivated. And so, I don't know, like, maybe that is on Tibbs. Like, you just had to get him right. Like, at one point, hey, give him a whole week off. Like, his knee's bugging him. Let him stay home from a road trip. Like, get his life right in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And he is playing a lot of minutes too, man. Like, he really has been.
Yeah.
And I get that he's so vital to them having success, so it's hard to just pull him out of a game. But you just look at the last handful of games that he's played. Now, there was an overtime game mixed in there, the Atlanta game that you just mentioned. But, you know, 38 minutes in New Orleans, 36 in Miami, 45 in the OT game against Atlanta, 37 against Chicago, a game that they won by 25 points. I mean,
well, that's the thing, right? It's the games that have been blowouts that he's, you got it pulled up right there. Didn't he play like a bunch against Sacramento too when they were like legit up by 30 at halftime?
Yeah, the home game against Sacramento.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played 36 minutes in that game.
Yeah, see, so those are the, I mean, those are the correctable things. Like, you can't do that, Tibbs. You can't. Particularly if you know that he is probably mentally and physically exhausted at this point You got to be looking for ways, you know, to cut down the minutes. There's a time and a place to play your guys upper 30 into 40 minutes. I think two examples of those are these last two games. It made sense to play Andrew Wiggins 43 minutes last night, right? Like, everyone's hurt. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, let's try and get through this game, have our guys back next time. Andrew, can you give us a little bit more? Same thing, you know, the game before where Cat, I think, ended up playing like 39 minutes, and Tibbs just went back to him early before took Gorgui Dieng out quicker and was just like, hey, we need Cat here against New Orleans to keep us in this game to go. Like, there are times and places for that, but that seems like the problem with Tibbs and his minutes is the games where you're like, why the heck did Derrick Rose play 39 minutes tonight?
Yeah. At Chicago. They win. I mean, you were there.
Yeah.
They won by 25 points in Chicago. That game was never really at any point in doubt. Like, especially in the second half, you knew the Wolves were going to win that game. And then you look and you see, oh, you won by 25 points and Derrick Rose played 38 bleeping minutes. Like, yeah. I just don't get it.
Can we call that one a homecoming sort of thing?
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, the game was in. I mean, the game was in hand.
Call him out. Give him his standing O. Like at the 5 minute mark. Yeah, you're right. It could have
5 minute mark. You're up by 30 or whatever it was. Like, come on. Like, you know, he's had his moment. You know what I mean?
He had. And I don't know. It is really weird because what was that like? That was a week ago, right? That game.
Yeah.
Like that. Christmas. That seemed like the peak of the Derrick Rose experience. Being there in Chicago at the United Center, like that dude was just beaming the whole time. Like he was so happy.
Yeah.
And then you see him in the locker room on Friday, 2 days after that, and he is like,
and when he played another 39 minutes against Atlanta,
and he is like drained of color. This sounds hyperbolic, but it's not. Like, he couldn't walk as he was getting out of the shower because he re-sprained his other ankle,
mm-hmm.
or not re-sprained, sprained a new ankle, the right one this time. And he's just, his body is just like dead, and he's like legit dragging his bag out of the locker room. And I mean, I respect the guy for it. He's got heart. He's literally working as hard as he possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
But he's it's wearing on him. Like,
yeah,
all of it is. It's not even just like, it's been a long time since Derrick Rose has played basketball this consistently in his life. Not even like the quantity of minutes, you know, like for the past, 5 years or something, he's had mixed in here and there, like a week or a month off because he's had a big injury. Like he's, you know, this is starting to weigh on him for sure. I hope he can make it back, but they got to make sure he gets all the way right, too, because you don't want to have a Covington situation with him.
Right. Well, and the other part of that, too, is, like, I go back to the Chicago game. He plays 38 minutes in a game that you won by a landslide. To me, it's like, that's where you look back at that game and say, if you would have scaled back the minutes on that night, he would have, because he played 39 minutes against Atlanta, and you needed him for those 39 minutes because you were getting your butts kicked in the first half.
Right.
And you needed him to sort of help get you back into the game, and you know, you forced overtime and everything. So it's like, in the games that you are getting blowouts, that you're winning by a large margin, if you pull your guys out of those, because you never know how much you're going to need a guy the next game. And case in point, they needed Derrick Rose for all 39 of those minutes against Atlanta, and you saw the end result. He rolled his ankle and he couldn't finish the game, but you said it, he was already cooked. At that point, he was cooked.
It was an exhaustion thing, and that, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but what Tibbs said after the game is like, you know, actually this was I wasn't there. This was to reporters once they were on the road trip. But he was like, you know, I don't agree that Derek's injury was a product of exhaustion or anything like that. Like he just stepped on somebody's ankle and rolled it, but I feel that human bodies, when they're exhausted, are more apt to get hurt.
They move differently.
They just do. Like, I think that played a role, you know, in him getting hurt. And yes, he could have just stepped on a foot and it randomly have caused a rolled ankle. But we're getting to a point of a sample size that there's been 5 games this season where Derrick Rose has played 38-plus minutes, and in every single one of the next games, he's either been hurt or missed completely. I don't know what sort of more evidence, even if that is just, even those are just five anomalies, what more you need to say, see, other than to say,
hey, maybe we should do things a little different.
Just a little different. And you know what? Yeah. And Tip said, I asked him, like, right once Derrick Rose started getting going a little bit at the beginning of the year, what's an optimal, in your mind, an optimal minute total for Derrick? And he said 26 to 28 minutes. That seems great.
Mm-hmm.
That seems great. I mean, they need him. They probably need him for all 28. Like, this team, you watched how the second unit, like, can't create or squat without him out. Like, they need 28 out of Derrick, but if you go for 38, it's gonna be there's gonna be too many zeros mixed in there, and you might I'm just like burning them to, you know, a core. Like if you keep going with that, so yeah, Manny, I'm with you. It seems like it's time to change. I want to see Derrick do well. I want to see him continue to play, and this doesn't seem like a path that has like a long term. Has a long term to it. I think it's just gonna end.
Yeah, I just don't understand, like, I mean, I understand there's probably going to be games where he's going to need to play 30-some plus minutes.
Sure.
Because, again, I'll go back to the Atlanta game. They needed him to play that much because the game was tight and close. I mean, they were getting the crap beat out of them in the first half because they just weren't playing any defense and that whole thing. They just played a terrible first half against a bad team. And they needed Derrick to just play more to get them back in it. And he played a big part in getting them back into that game. But it's like you're flirting with putting his gas tank on complete E because you played him 38 minutes the two nights before in a game that you wanted a blowout, that you didn't need to play him for that much.
Well, and I think that the real example of this is at the end of overtime, who got the last shot of the game?
Wiggins.
And that's because Derrick's not in there.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we would want that to be capped, but it's really hard to give it to do that with a
center. It's always tricky with bigs.
Yes. But the ball ended up going to Wiggins. And to Wiggins' credit, he drew a foul, got to the line. Not to his credit, he didn't knock him down. In a vacuum, I want Derrick Rose taking that shot over Andrew Wiggins 100% of the time. That is the optimal strategy, in my opinion, for this team. Is Derrick Rose is a better creator, a better finisher, and more mentally tough than Andrew Wiggins. So you need him. They didn't have him because he redlined in the first half, I don't know, or he redlined from a product of the Chicago game and the Atlanta game. And so, yes, there just is at some point, and what I think Tom Thibodeau needs to realize is that at some point there is just diminishing returns.
Yeah.
To minutes played. And that's a great example. Maybe that game goes differently if you got Derrick Rose out there to take that last shot instead of Andrew Wiggins. Maybe he gets fouled. Maybe he knocks down both of those free throws. It's a different story. I think you play that out 1,000 times, the result is much better with Derrick Rose in those 1,000 times than the 1,000 Andrew Wiggins times. So, yeah, they need him. They need to get him back. And you know, here's the hope in Tibbs is – has recognized, okay, this one was a little bit more. This ankle injury lingered. Your body really seems to have been cooked. Maybe it's time we make a couple little changes. Like, I guess we'll see. I don't know what else we can do other than flap our lips about this because it just doesn't change. Tibbs just does what he does. But I'm hoping for Derek's sake and for the sake of the team, because I think it helps the team win, that something different happens.
So with Tyus Jones, and we talked about this, it must have been, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now, because you had some numbers on how Tyus performs when he's playing with the starters. And now with, you know, Rose missing games and Jeff Teague has been out for a little bit now, you know, Tyus has been starting and he's been productive. And I'm still of the belief that big picture, long term, Tyus Jones is at best probably a backup point guard in the NBA, which I think he can have a nice, long, really good career as like a second unit point guard in this league for a long time. But I just wonder if, when you look at how the starters are performing, particularly Karl Anthony Towns, I wonder if this long-term for Cat is, if Tyus is the type of point guard that needs to play with Cat. in that Tyus is just a guy that he's going to initiate the offense. He's going to get them going into their offense, but he's not going to dominate the ball. And he's a capable shooter if you leave him open off the ball.
I'm totally with you, and I'm going to go back to the Thibodeau Bulls teams before. Like, that's not the type of point guard you wanted on those teams, because you had Joakim Noah as your big, who was a distributing big, right? Like, he's not a guy who's just going to back you down in the post. He's not a guy that you're just going to feed on the block. You have Cat, who is the inverse of that. I think actually one of his greatest weaknesses is his ability to distribute out of the post, but he's a finisher. Get him the ball down there and he's gonna score. He's elite at that. So you need to have the point guard who's kind of the opposite of that. So like back in the day in Chicago, you had obviously D Rose at the beginning, but even like they had those Nate Robinsons, those DJ Augustines,
Aaron Brooks, who
were like fill it up guys.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an interesting kind of polarization you need at the point guard center position of those opposites. I don't know, man. I watched Tyus Jones play these last three games where I think his numbers are like 14-9 and 3 steals per game.
He's been really productive for the last handful of games.
And you know, I do think there's a spot for him in the maybe it's not on the Timberwolves, but I do think there's a spot for him in the NBA to be a starting point guard. And maybe that's like the 28th best, you know. But there's 30 starting point guards. Like, I think there's a team where you have these other score cat type guys, score first kind of guys, and what you need is a guy who's gonna quickly get to his spots and distribute well from there. I mean, one thing I just keep noticing is him habitually moving after entering the ball to the post or doing anything. I mean, he's never static. And that I mean, particularly when you like juxtapose that upon what Jeff Teague normally looks like in those situations, it's so different, and you can just see the offense hum at a rate that it doesn't at other times. Like, yeah, you could point to the Wolves having only gone 1-2 in this stretch, but there were other injuries, and I think it's hard to blame Tyus over this last road trip for the losses. I mean, I think he was a guy who you can expect that multiple effort energy, as Tibbs always says. Like, he's a guy who's gonna give it to you. He doesn't wax and wane. Yes, he's not gonna be some like superstar guy who's gonna go off and get you like 35 or anything like that. But he might help your center go get 35. He probably will help your center go do that. So, you know, I like it. I don't know what his future is here in Minnesota. It's hard with Jeff Teague and a player option next season. Derrick Rose having a great year, being an unrestricted free agent. Tom Thibodeau obviously being more inclined to point guards like Teague and Rose.
The Gunners, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that means that Tyus Jones gets his opportunity to show he's the 25th best point guard in the NBA here in Minnesota. But I think watching him over this past week makes me believe that, yeah, he could be. I could see him in the right situation start on a team in the league. Maybe it's not a contender or something. Maybe it's not even a playoff team. But, like, there's other guys out there around the league. Like, D'Anthony Melton is starting for the Suns. DJ Augustine, who the Wolves play on Friday.
Yeah.
He starts for the Orlando Magic. Like, Tyus can be more than those guys. And I don't know. Like, maybe it's a Dennis Schroeder. That's, like, his career peak, where he's a backup point guard but like kind of the sixth man and involved in that way. Still, that's a really productive player, and he's Tyus has continually time and again got out on the floor and showed that he's deserved more and more time. He rarely disappoints with his production and what he shows and the effort he provides for the team.
And I think with Cat, I mean, how many times have we talked about with Cat that he, in order to get the most out of Cat, it's just like he just has to be involved. Even if he's not always the one shooting the ball, you get him touches in an offensive set or a possession, you're just going to get more out of Karl Anthony Towns.
You got to trick him. You got to trick him into thinking he's helping.
Yeah, and Tyus is a guy that is going to – he's going to bring the ball up the floor, and he's just going to – that offense is just going to start. It's just going to get going right away, and he's going to get the ball into Cat right away, and then they just go, and it just seems like once you just get that first touch for Cat, even if he's not going to be the one that takes the shot, it just the offense just seems to go much better when you just get that first initiation. And Tyus just seems to do that. And, you know, we just see, and this is not to say that Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose are bad players, but they're guys that are going to bring the ball up and they're going to dribble for a while before they really get anything going. And sometimes it works, but I think other times, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with a guy that's just going to bring the ball up, get the ball across the timeline and get that first pass out, and then boom, there's the offense just goes.
Somewhere along the way, like, the job of the point guard stopped being the guy who gets other people going, you know? Like, now what you look around the league at the, you know, the Damian Lillards, the Steph Currys, the whatever.
Kemba Walker.
Kemba, yeah. Like, they're the guys, they just get the offense going, you know? Like, themselves by their scoring and their creating. And it's a little bit old school, I guess, now, but it used to be enough to just be super solid and be the guy who, you know, just says, hey, who needs a touch right here on this team? Like, the, you know, the real cerebral guy who is like, it doesn't show up in his numbers, but he's the one that is making sure the guy who hasn't scored a bucket in the third quarter gets a touch right here. The guy who makes sure to deliver it to Cat on the block on his right side because he's more comfortable going left. Like, whatever it is, like, that cerebral type of point guard, that sort of thing doesn't exist as much in the NBA anymore. And I think that is what Tyus is. So, like, is maybe he wrong for this time? Like, to some degree, would he have been better in, like, 2009 than 2019? I don't know.
But I don't know.
I do still think there's a spot for that guy. And
I think there's value there.
I think we're going to continue to see it this season because I don't have any trust in Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose staying healthy for the extended portions of the season. So,
but that is my concern, though, is that when those guys, if and when those guys are back, talking about Rose and Teague, that Tyus is just going to get sort of buried again towards sort of the end, back to being playing like 10, 12 minutes a night. And I just feel like he should be playing more than that.
So, you know? So what do you? How do we do that differently? You just kind of like sub Teague out earlier, and get Tyus in there a little bit earlier, like in the first quarter and the third quarter there, like so it extends.
We're not
up to
playing Derrick Rose 38 minutes.
Yeah, but D Rose is playing the two so much of the time. Like,
yeah,
Rose's minutes are alongside one of Tyus or Teague. So, I think the way you get Rose's minutes down is by giving more to Okogie or, you know, or Wiggins or Covington and that sort of way. Like, you mix up the wing minutes. For Tyus, it's...
Well, if you've got 48 minutes for that position, so to speak, the lead guard.
Right.
I mean, can you split it 28-20 between the two guys? 27-21? I mean, does Teague need to play 30 plus minutes?
No, I'm with you. I think,
you know,
I think that the 28-20, that sounds good to me. It's not necessarily a huge jump from what has been happening before. I think like the more normal rotation would have been like 32-16.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like that would be an initial step in the right direction. I don't know. Well, it's just not going to happen, anything
no,
bigger than that.
No, of course not. Of course not.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel like just for me, this year has been an exercise in really like thinking about how rotations work. You know, I just think there's been times in the past where I've just been like, you know, just give this guy a couple more minutes here and take a couple away from there. And like,
but you still have to think about like fit and what that, you know, what that lineup looks like and the kind of effect that giving a guy more, you know, giving a certain guy more minutes might have on the other four guys on the floor or certain guys. And
the trickle down, right? Like, I guess I'm starting to realize that that's really, you know, really a thing. And I'm also starting to see some value in, like, a big reason why the second unit has been good since Covington and Saric got here, is because they've really had this extended chunk of time from the end of the first to, like, the middle of the second. And then, like, you same thing in the second half. So, I'm like, all right, well, if we want to keep an extended chunk there, because I think that's a good thing, how do you make other things around on the margin? So I just, that would be the biggest thing I would say to anybody is like, yeah, we could talk about rotation adjustments, but sweeping rotation adjustments,
right?
Like doubling minutes for somebody or cutting somebody else's in half, like that's so much harder said than done.
It's a lot of I mean, it's easy to just say that they should do it, but it's right. You know, when you got to think about the trickle down effect, like you said, and just how much that can affect everybody else on the team and the roster, and you know, and the reality is, if something is working, if the team is playing well, and if something is working right, I mean, you always got to be careful about disrupting that whole thing too. So,
I'm with you, man. It'll be interesting. Be interesting to see with him, and his restricted free agency is going to be fascinating. I have no idea how much money he's going to get this offseason.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see like a team that needs a point guard, you know, a team like Phoenix or, you know, maybe Orlando is looking at, you know, trying to, you know, change that position for them too. I mean, it's not a real deep point guard draft. I mean, there's some good ones, but not really, you know, they're not just lining up with point guards in this upcoming draft, I don't think. So,
no, and Tyus will be young still. He'll be 22.
Yeah.
People will be, you know, wanting to go after him too. So, I hope the best for him. I hope it's in Minnesota. But it'll be that's something to follow the second half of the year for sure.
All right. Follow Dane on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. Follow me at MannyHill84. Follow Danny at Real D Cunningham, even though he's soaking up the sun in Mexico right now. Give him a little grief for leaving us high and dry here in the cold. But Danny will be back with us next week. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves. Find us on iTunes, podcast1.com, 1500ESPN.com as well. Talk to you next time.